Welcome to Live the Fuel.
Welcome to Live
Welcome
the Fuel.
To Live the Fuel. Focusing on health, business, and lifestyle. And now your host, Scott Mulvaney.
All right, good day, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another Live the Fuel show. Today, I'm pretty excited to bring on another new co-host for you guys. This is, once again, another co-host that I met from Thrive Make Money Matter 2016. I've lost track. This must be fifth, sixth, maybe even seventh. I'm going to have to probably start tracking that. But I'm really excited to bring this gentleman on. He's got a lot of exciting things happening here. He's the founder of Cobbs Media. I hope I'm pronouncing that right, but he'll probably dig into me on that anyway. And he's also author of Fish Out of Water. And I'm actually going to take some accountability here because I haven't had time to even order it yet. We literally just met a few weeks ago. But he's also been a writer for Social Media Examiner. He's been a writer for the Huffington Post. He's definitely a social media expert because I've actually been digging into some of his background and just what he does. And I'm a huge social media buff with my branding and what we do for our clients too. But I mean, this guy's been featured on Entrepreneur Magazine, Social Media Examiner, Huffington Post. I mean, top 30 entrepreneurs under the age of 30 by Influenza.com. There's just so much he's got going on at such a healthy young age. I'm just so excited to bring him on today. So without further ado, Calvin Wayman, welcome.
Scott, super excited to just sit here and hang out with you. Thanks for having me.
Hey, I'm excited, man. This is your energy that we didn't really get a chance. Thrive was so crazy. I didn't get a chance to literally
a lot going on.
Oh my God. It was like trying to track everybody down and just connect with people who have common energy levels, which is usually off the charts. I was like, you know what? I'm going to track this guy down and get him on the episode on the podcast because this has pretty much happened with every other person from Thrive that I met is they've now been coming on the show and we're getting to know each other a little bit better just because that event was so immersive. And just so much. I don't know, man. I mean, what did you think about that?
That event changed everything for me a year ago. So it was amazing coming back to it because a year ago, because again, I'm hearing you give that bio and it's crazy how much has happened. But this is the crazy part. Out of everything that you just barely said, none of that existed at Last Thrive.
I know.
Like
part of your background, like there was like literally a transition from early 2015, right?
Yes. So I quit my day job at the beginning of 2015. And then last year at Thrive, something that gave me a big boost was finally being around other people like us, you know, other people like me, because my whole life, let's just be honest, as entrepreneurs, we're the minority. We're weird. There's just something that's weird about us. And so it was for the first time where everybody I looked to, I was just like, oh my gosh, you understand me. You get me. And it just kind of pushed it forward. And there were so many amazing people where like Gary Vee and Robert Herjavec and stuff like that were from last year.
Yeah, Johnny Dumas. I wish I would have found out about this last year because I was like, man, I follow all those guys.
Totally. That's where I hung out with John Lee Dumas heavily for the first time, Michael O'Neill, and just got to know all of these people in the game making it happen. And so it was super fun for me to go again this year and be a part of that same energy and realize, holy shit, last year it was actually Last Thrive where I connected with somebody that got me into Entrepreneur Magazine. And things just happened from there. And that's what led me to the snowball effect from Entrepreneur to Huffington Post, Social Media Examiner, getting featured in Influenza. And
well, hold on a second. Let's not jump past that. I mean, Entrepreneur Magazine is now a very reputable rag. How the heck did you get that?
I met somebody at Thrive.
Like, are you serious?
Yeah. So last year, the only thing I had going for me last Thrive was I had just barely gotten into Periscope.
Okay.
And that was the thing that I was focused on. Something I actually haven't told very many people is at that event at Thrive, Ty Lopez bought my Periscope course. He was one of the first one of my first few clients was – he was like – I started talking to him about Periscope because he was doing it. And then he had Maya, his right-hand lady, connect with me and was like, get whatever course he has because he knows about Periscope.
Are you serious? He was already rocking it. I mean, he was already huge.
Yeah, he was huge. But I'm just saying, he was one of my first clients because he was one of the speakers at Thrive and I connected with him and he bought my course. But what made me get into Entrepreneur Magazine from Last Thrive is there's this cool guy named Jeff Woods. I don't know if you know Jeff, but he and I connected before Thrive. He's the one that got me at Thrive.
Okay.
And we were just connecting, and there was just this energy of supporting one another because we're all in this thing together. We're all entrepreneurs. And he was like, so what's the next thing for you? And I said, I want to get known and like write an article for a well-known name. And he was like, you mean like Entrepreneur Magazine? And I said, exactly like Entrepreneur Magazine. And he said, fancy you say that. I actually write for Entrepreneur. Can you write? And I was like, I think so. And he's like, are you good? And I was like, I did good in college. Like I've never really written like consistently per se, except that I've been journaling every single day since I was 17. So
well, like it's like reps in the gym. You know,
yes.
If you keep it going, it's got to get better sooner or later.
Totally. By the way, another side note, that's one of Jerry Seinfeld's secrets that he says why he's such a good comedian. He's just wrote every day, even if it was shit. But but long story short, he connected me with his editor. Well, I actually did not get connected to the editor, but he talked to his editor for me for an article idea on Periscope. I gave it to him, and they actually rejected it. They said, this is a pile of shit. This is not good.
Wow.
But if you have any other idea, then let us know. And so what I decided to do is I learned from that first experience of them rejecting the article that editors don't want to read the whole article. They don't have time to.
Okay.
And so I decided to just create an article pitch of just the title and literally full 4 bullets, like not even explaining the bullet. Like it was something super simple like, how to understand your customers better than ever before with Periscope. Number one, do live Q&A. Number two, ask them what they want. Number three, ask them what they'll pay for. Like stuff like that, super simple. And I decided to just send them that. But instead of just sending one, I sent 3 at once. And so now the editor had 3 simple ideas to choose from, and they picked one.
Smart move.
Yeah, so that's how I got into Entrepreneur Magazine, which made it easier to get into the other ones as well.
So basically, not necessarily overwhelm them, but say, listen, I mean, I've got three areas to go with. You got to pick at least one.
Totally. And okay. they feel like they're in control because, I mean, from my perspective, I'm like, make me a contributor, make me a contributor, make me a contributor,
right?
And so, and for their perspective, they're like, oh, let's go with this one. So it's just like a win-win, and they didn't and it was something they could decide in under 30 seconds looking at the 3 different ideas. And so, yeah, that's what happened.
Is that how you got in with Huffington too? Are they kind of the same filtering process or?
Huffington was so easy because I have already written for Entrepreneur. And so I emailed them. I got a hold of an email from somebody over there, and I told them that I wrote for Entrepreneur Magazine already. I linked to my profile of Entrepreneur and my article. And I was going to give them an article pitch, but first I just sent into the email, let me know if you would like to hear an article pitch.
Hmm.
And then they got back with me and was like, here's your login. If you already write for Entrepreneur Magazine and stuff like that, here's your login. We would love to have you over here at Huffington.
So wow.
That's got me in there.
So a little social cred from that big word Entrepreneur Magazine, man. Wow.
Yep. It just carried over. And then same thing with Social Media Examiner. So Social Media Examiner is a tough one to get into because they have a very strict entrance process, and then they even like fill you out and make sure the article's good. But one of the things that you have to do to get in is send in 3 articles from 3 other places that you've written for, right?
Oh, interesting.
And it has to be around the topic that you want to write about. Luckily, the 3 I wanted to write about social media, obviously, in Social Media Examiner, and the other 2 articles that I had written for Huffington and Entrepreneur were social media related. So I gave them those 2 articles, and then just an article off my blog, and that was enough to open the door for that as well.
I think Social Media Examiner, are they the ones who run the social media marketing podcast? That's the same guys, right? Michael Stelzner?
Yes. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. You got it.
I follow
and
that podcast.
Yes. Yeah. And then they have the Social Media Marketing World event every year in San Diego, 3,000 to 6,000 people there, something like that. Yeah. Those are the guys.
It is true. Michael O'Neill talks about this a lot too. He's like, you know, San Diego's become the hotbed. There's a lot going on in your house, man. I'm on the East Coast here. I was like, I'm literally an hour from New York City. I'll be there Wednesday night. And I'm like, man, everything seems to be happening on the West Coast right now. I don't know
it
what's going on.
It kind of feels that way. So I was living down there for a little bit, and I've since moved to Arizona.
Oh.
I'm in a super small town in Arizona. I'm in Salt Lake City right now for the next few days for the holidays. But yeah, I've moved from the Southern California area now to just this area here in Arizona.
And is it because of the crazy cost of living? Because it is crazy.
It was actually just kind of the same reason that made me move there. It was just to challenge myself. So I lived in Utah and I quit my day job. I love it too. It's looking great.
Skiing at Snowbird is just,
heavy. I'm looking up at the mountains right now and it's covered in some snow because it got like its first big snowfall a few days ago and it's supposed to be snowing in the mountains over the next few days some more. But I'm from Utah and I wanted to just do something to shake my normal. So in spring 2015, just a little over a year and a half ago, I quit my day job and moved to Southern California and started doing door to door just to like shake off any feeling of employee that I might have developed.
Like B2B door to door, or?
I was selling solar energy door to door.
I've known a few people who have done that.
Yeah.
I think one of the companies is called like Solar City or I don't know.
Yeah, Solar City is a very well-known one.
Yeah.
The one I was with was Solcius. It's not very well-known because there's like 1,000 of them just in Southern California alone.
And I lived in Colorado and there was like probably 10 different companies out there doing it too.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. So the reason I moved to Arizona is I wanted to, after I went, got my experience through door-to-door, because a mentor told me that if you could do 4 months of door-to-door, you probably could do pretty much anything. And that's a whole story in and of itself. Door-to-door was one of the most gut-wrenching, anxious, depressive things I've ever done in my entire life. And I wouldn't change it for anything because it just taught me so freaking much.
I'll back you on 100%. I've been a sales and marketing professional for years. And I've seen it in the call center world and I've seen it in the real world. And you can't beat real face-to-face, like nerves, sweat. Like,
yeah, totally. And so you and I feel that because we've both done call center stuff too, coming from, we talked about that on the pre-show and that's what I left. I was a manager at a call center and it was a cushy kind of mostly salary job. And so a lot of my friends and family and other people were like, what the F are you doing?
Yeah,
Why are you downgrading? Why are you going from that type of a job to do door to door? Like, and it wasn't necessarily for the money as much as it was for pushing myself and doing something that I know I would absolutely hate.
Let's clarify that. I love this piece. This is a lifestyle tip, and I don't want to pass by that. You and I have a very common ground here. Most of my call centers, I worked for a company that one of their biggest contracts back in the late 90s into the early 2000s was when you dialed 411 on your now Verizon cell phone. You actually got our call centers for direct resistance.
Got it.
So that was mostly inbound. And that's where that's where I literally cut my teeth and started working my way up. And I was a startup company. Then years later, I ended up going to a company called OmniPoint, which was bought by a company called VoiceStream, which eventually became T-Mobile USA, owned by a company in Germany called Deutsche Telekom. So crazy fast forward. The point is, I worked my ass off to get up in those companies. And I didn't have a degree. I originally went to school. Then got distracted by the salary growth, the promotion of working hard. So I took time off.
I was making
more money than my friends coming out of college. So I was like, sweet.
Sure. You didn't have the college debt.
Right. So, but you do it long enough and it sounds like you're kind of there too. It's like, is the cushiness what I want? Like I literally, this is probably 26, 27 years of age. I've talked to this about this on prior episodes. And I forget the author because there's now four or five different books on this, but I literally bought a book called Quarter Life Crisis. And it sounds like you had kind of that like dig deep, figure out what you want.
Dude, that's exactly what happened. So I'm 27 and I'm like, I knew that somewhere in the back of my head I wanted to be an entrepreneur. I wanted to create my own business. But then I'm like, well, I'm going to wait for the right time or I'll do a side hustle that's big enough and then I'll be able to jump ship.
Which a lot of us do.
Yeah. And it made a lot of sense. But I had to get honest with myself after each birthday was coming by. My 25th birthday comes by and I look over the last year and I have to like, oh, shit. I don't have a lot to that I'm looking at, like I don't have a lot to show for the last year. Then 26 comes around, I'm like, yeah, I still don't have a lot to show for the last year. Then 27 comes around, I'm like, frick, something's got to change or nothing's going to change,
right?
Something's got to change or nothing's going to change. And I had a moment where I projected myself 10 years in the future. And I basically had a conversation with my 10-year-older self and was like, what the shit should I do here? And the thing that I – a couple things. The first thing that ate at my soul was, what if 10 years down the road nothing had changed? I'm just 10 years older. I'm doing the same thing, so getting less fulfillment out of it, and it's getting more boring.
Oh, that scares maybe the hell a little out bit.
Oh, that scared me so bad. And this is what scared me even worse. So that scared me. And then the thought of was this, like I knew I had this little flame in my gut section to want to go create something bigger.
Okay.
And I thought, what if when I'm close to 40, that flame dies? Like, what if the desire to want to be an entrepreneur and to do something bigger dies?
Because you didn't exercise it, you didn't stoke it, didn't keep the fire burning.
Yes, okay. Exactly.
I'm feeling
what if I
that.
Wake up? What if I wake up and I'm just one of these older dudes that like, oh yeah, I was just one of those dreamers in the 20s. That's just a bunch of bullshit. Nobody really does that. Like, this is what real life is. And like a cynical older dude.
Yeah.
Like the fear of that happening and me kind of just wanting to be a dream stealer of other 20-year-olds and like, well, just wait till reality kicks you in the butt and you have kids and life comes around and you have to get a house and a mortgage and all this. All those are just dreams. Like, the
but what you just said there is being said by countless people because they've allowed life to overtake them, so to speak,
exactly.
And to create these roadblocks and speed bumps. Whereas
yes.
what you just said prior to that is, dude, you just realize, okay, all I got to do is keep fueling the fire, okay?
Yes.
Hate to use my keyword, but it's awesome that way. It's like,
oh, totally.
How do I keep fueling the fire, even if it's just burning at a low ember rate so it doesn't go out, but just what can I do? Because this is life. We are going to get houses and kids and whatever's going to happen is going to happen. But if you ignore it,
yes.
Man, I can never be a cynical. I can't stand that. That's crazy.
Oh my gosh. And even worse, again, I didn't want to be the guy that woke up and just said, you know what? 80, 90, 100 grand a year is it. Nothing against that.
No,
but
that's
I look
true.
At people like Gary Vaynerchuk and Grant Cardone and people I admire, and I'm like, why not go after that?
Grant's
like,
crazy. That guy's ridiculous.
Yeah, he is ridiculous, but why not go after that? Gary Vaynerchuk's ridiculous. Why not go after that? And I mean, I still believe in what Gary talks about all the time. Do what makes you happy. But I didn't want my own self, just my own lack of going after it, turn me into the cynic that I couldn't ever get it. I didn't want fear to be the reason I didn't go after it. I didn't want to have that regret when I'm 40 saying that I wish I would have, but I didn't. Oh, well, and then come up with some way to justify it that makes it just into this cynical little crap. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
And so what I realized is when I was in that conversation with my 10-year-older self, I was like, when should I do it? And basically my older, wiser 37, I guess, year-old self at the time was like, as you get older – as we already mentioned, you're going to get more responsibility, not less. So if you ever want to have the flexibility to actually do this, do it now. The sooner, the better. And so after that day, that's when I said, you know what? I'm going to freaking quit my job. I got to at least try.
Well, now let's be fair. Let's be some transparent here. At that time, when you made that decision, what were your obligations? Just so people can, like, our
totally.
Listeners can know, like, where were you at that time? Because everybody in their late 20s is at a completely different place.
Totally. So my obligations were I had a wife and a 1-year-old son.
Oh, you got me beat.
and I had my credit card debt, my student loan debt, and did I say car loan?
Not yet, but yeah, that's pretty common.
And that's in there as well. And I was paying rent, so I didn't have like a mortgage or anything like that. And then like some businessy loans and stuff like that. And so at the time, it was, I think everything was around $32,000 or $33,000 in in debt. Plus, then after I quit my job, I invested $20,000 in
startup.
Coaching.
Oh, and, oh, not even startup. That's just
Startup. Just in coaching. While I was doing door to door. So last year I was in the deepest hole that I've ever been, and that was around $53,000. So.
And the scary part is that's a bare minimum for new college kids coming out.
Right. That's the thing. Oh my gosh, you're gonna start really firing me up because I was just talking to some younger kids that were at this event that I keynoted over the weekend, and they come to my table and talk to me, and they're I was like, so how was the message? And so most kids loved it, but then there was these few kids that it just eats at my soul that they're just part of the system. Like, well, it's so risky to be an entrepreneur, or it's so risky to go out and do your own thing. And I'm like, what are your plans? And their plan is to go to college and go get into debt, $100,000 to $200,000, and then pay that off working for somebody else.
Yep.
I'm like, hey, let's be real there. You know, I have nothing against college or whatever, but I'm like, what's more risky, being in control or working for somebody else and only having that cap? And again, if you love that, and that's the and you're doing something that you want to do, fine. But I think what's more true is that there's this system that society has built that there's the right way to do something. Go to school, sure. Get good grades, get your freaking college degree, and that you're going to be set.
Well,
and that's not how it is.
You know, I didn't even learn from my own, I guess, education and then mistakes, because exactly what you're just talking about. Like when I went back, you know, I took time off from school. I was like, oh, you know what? The engineering degree didn't feel like it was going to fit. I had a lot of growth opportunity in these companies. I'm like, let's just go with that. And then years later, from I think 06, I decided to go back to start taking classes in my free time.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I was like, you know, because my resume is already looking great, but I didn't have that checkbox filled in. I didn't have that degree. So I'm like, killing myself from 2006 to 2009, squeezing in classes. Then I found a program at a private university locally here that was accelerated. So every 8 weeks, I could bang out classes. But because it's a private university, it's going to be a little bit more expensive. And
correct.
I just said, you know what? It's an investment in myself. So clearly, my entrepreneurial mindset was still in sleep mode. And I did it. And I was like, okay, so technically, great. I'm the first person in my family to have a college degree. Cool. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'll take that. That actually is nice. I have the debt still to back that up. And I mean, I'm a classic Gen X, and I just turned 39 in September. So I have new college debt because I did that. And then my wake up call clicked in. I guess you want to call it senior year, but I was working. So I don't know what you want to call that. But during that last year, I was like, holy shit. I don't want to be doing this. And I set a plan in motion. Just quick background on me for you. I had briefly dated a girl who was more of just a fun relationship. She was moving back to Nevada. I've still never been married to the state versus yourself. And she was moving back to become a wildland firefighter. And I'm like, why?
Nice.
And she said, you know, I just don't want to be in the business world. I want to do something that gives back to people. I want to become a masseuse. She's like, I love helping people feel better. I'm like, wow. So, but she's like, I need to make money to do that. So she's like, I'm going to sacrifice a summer or two, serve with the federal government doing wildland firefighting on a hotshot crew, which is very hard to get on. They're very elite. Long story short, that's what I ended up doing. So she did that, but only did it for a summer, made enough money, lived simple, and then sent herself to Vegas to go get trained as a professional masseuse and now runs her own business out of her house.
Heck yes.
Awesome. And she was still in her 20s when she figured that out. So then I'm still, again, entrepreneurial mindset, not clicking in. I said, well, great. I hate the corporate world. I'm not liking it anymore. My degree is going to be done soon. What do I go and do? I go and get obsessed with this. I'm following it on Google in my free time. Then I find a fire academy in New York. I go and get certified, go through the courses, become a certified wildland firefighter with the federal government, talk to my teacher. And he said, dude, he's like, what do you want to do? And I'm like, I want to be a hotshot. He's like, you have no firefighting background. How do you expect to go on a hotshot crew? I'm like, do not give me a challenge. I will overcome it. and found it. He's like, fine, you come to Colorado. We have another academy coming up. I'll get you connected with people out there because I believe in networking, something you and I understand.
Yes. Yep.
This is something I teach and speak on to people. Networking is powerful. So I already had that skill set from the business world. And I'm like, I'm going to apply this to the firefighting world. Sure enough, one of the instructors at that academy actually had just became an interim superintendent of a hotshot crew in Arizona. And we met over lunch and he said, you are older than I normally hire. Because I was 32. I was 32.
Okay. About 7 years ago. Okay.
Yeah. But he's like, dude, he's like, you're not, he's like, we usually hire 18 to 24. And I said, well, I just finished a marathon. I'm a huge fitness junkie. You clearly could tell that I'm dedicated because I've done schooling and everything else. I was like, give me a shot. I'll make sure you don't regret it. He's like, promise me 2 years. And I said, done. And he gave me the job.
Nice.
So I got, so for 2 years, I got to go hike in the mountains, wielding chainsaws, 40, 50 pound packs, 16 hours a day on the fire line. I served as an elite hotshot wildland firefighter. Life-changing experience. Definitely not the corporate world.
Yeah, totally.
But that
what was that like? What did you like about it? Because 16, those are long hours. So what kept you going with that?
That's a great question. I think literally that was what was so powerful about that experience. Being physically beat down. Like we had to do this for two weeks straight on a fire. So like learning, because I'd already run my first marathon in 2008 before that. That was my first true mental like, whoa. And I'd already been working full time, going to school nights and weekends. So I've been building this. I've never really talked about it this way before. This is cool. I realize now I'm talking about this. Like I've been building that level of mental fortitude. Uh-huh. I mean, clearly I had the physical, no big deal. But now the mental fortitude is so key to go along with that. And I think just doing that day in and day out, and then learning what it was like to serve alongside of other people with passion and willing to sacrifice their personal lives for something bigger. That's something that I never experienced in the business world. That's something that if you met Rich Brocchini at Thrive, if you haven't, I already had him on the show. He's got a past episode. He's in California. He's called the Firefighterpreneur.
Okay.
He's got a great story too. But the point is, I've never experienced that level of connection, that level of dedication, and that level of physical and mental exhaustion.
Love that.
So once I finished that, I felt like I was invincible, but I was still lost. You know, I did it for 2 years. I realized this is not what I want to do the rest of my life either.
Yes.
So now I've gone from two extremes, right? I was in the business world, corporate world. Now I've gone to the complete public service world.
Yep.
I need to find something that meets me in the middle.
Uh-huh.
So fast forward and...
What made you actually get into it? Because here's where I would have been with that. You were working in the public service and it's not in corporate, but it's still working for somebody else and not doing your own thing.
It was
so
federal.
Did you have any of that? Did you have any of that? Like you're still not totally, I guess, free.
That was the wake up. Yeah, it happened actually towards the end of the first year. Actually, I was not going to come back that second year. But I'm old school. I mean, I grew up on a farm. My dad taught me, you know, your word is your bond, right?
Nice.
So you're a farm kid too?
That's another thing we have in common. Yeah, just a super small farm. I got up in the morning and milked a cow.
Yep.
Did all that, pigs, chickens,
goats.
Stuff like that. Yeah.
Oh yeah, yep. I had my own chicken coop. I sold eggs. That was my first. Income stream at.
Dude, me too. Except it wasn't. It wasn't. I had to sneak it. It wasn't on purpose. Like one of my first early memories was because we didn't sell the eggs. We didn't have quite enough to sell. But I remember like one time my grandma was going to be coming over, and me and my older brother concocted a plan that. When grandma came over, that means the parents were going to be preoccupied. And so it'd be easier for us to slip away. And so I remember like, I was like 8 years old or something. So me and my older brother, we get some eggs and we go sell it to some of the neighbors.
Okay. So, all right.
While everybody else, like that was, we were sneaking out to be entrepreneurial.
Hey.
And then we sold a dozen of eggs for $2 and then we got to split the profits.
Wow. That's pricey, man. Cause I was doing this in the late 80s and I was selling them for a buck a dozen. So
yeah, yeah. So, but we just needed to have a clear split in the profits, you see?
Okay.
So that's why we had to ask for $2 so I could get one and
that's
my brother
awesome.
Could get the other. So
I like that. Yeah,
so that's totally funny.
But yeah, I mean, so the whole point of that, as you and I are connecting on that level too, it's like, dude, you can't beat learning hard work. That's something that I've never been able to give up on. I know people know anything about me. Like, that's one trait that I can't change. I've had it since childhood. I know how to work hard. That's it. The difference is how to work smarter and harder at the same time.
Right.
And to your point, rewinding back to this firefighting thing and the government thing, is that I realize, oh my God, the government, no offense, is worse than the corporate world because they're also choked up by paperwork and procedures. And it was very militaristic. And it was funny because I had taken these tests back in high school called ASVAB tests. And I scored like one of the top people in my class. So that whole summer I was being pounded by every branch in the military trying to recruit me. And I said, no, I will never work for the man. And I knew that back then. Like, it's crazy how I had these things in my head and then I forget about them. Because I saw how my father struggled being an entrepreneur.
Oh, really? He was an entrepreneur and he struggled at it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he didn't, he went through a couple of bankruptcies with his business, but always rebuilt it. Always rebuilt it. We always had a roof over our head. We always had a meal on our table. So years later, now that I have a brain in my head at a different level, different personality now, it's like, I look back and I'm like, Scott, that was your school right there. Like, my dad never gave up. He kept working. He kept building it. He had to morph his business in different ways to adapt to the markets. Like, I can look back at now, it's like, wow, that was so educational. But back then, I didn't know any better. And I just saw, well, I'm just going to chase the corporate world because I'll make real money.
Yeah, that's so interesting. Because that's like the opposite of most people, right? Because my dad was, I mean, he has his own business now, but it didn't start that way.
Okay.
He was more in the corporate and didn't have the freedom and the flexibility and was always like struggling, it felt like, to make the money work. And so that's part of the reason why I wanted to go create my own thing, because I never saw him coming close to being a millionaire growing up. And I was like, man, but if I'm going to be a millionaire, I'm not going to do it in the corporate world. You know, I'm not going to go just kill myself for 30 or 40 years just to get a pension plan.
I agree. So, and one of the quotes, I still can't remember who the heck told this to me many years ago, was one of my mentors, but it's hilarious because he's like, listen, you can keep climbing that corporate ladder, but every time you knock somebody off ahead of you and you take their place, he's like, there's still somebody else's fat ass above your head.
Totally. Still some. Yeah. And then there's another quote that's around the same thing as something around the lines of, what good does it do to climb up the ladder if it's against the wrong wall or something like that? If you're not doing something you love. And that's what I realized is I was climbing and I was climbing a ladder against a wall of something I wasn't really excited in.
That's a great one. I like that. That's a good point. Because, I mean, we are all given different directions in life. And it, honestly, it is easier to choose the easier path, right? And a lot of us we're so, going back to your earlier point, where as we're getting older, more life starts rolling in. And it gets to a point where you're like, oh, you know, I got a family. I've got this. I got that. You know, this is the easier path. I should just keep doing that.
Yep.
And this affects so many people.
And that's what I realized is I didn't want to get to that point because it's short term versus long term too. It's easier in the short term, right? But in the long term, when you have teenagers and you want to go do stuff with them, you want to take them to Disneyland, you want to go do things with your family, but you're like, I can't, I have to go in to the office and keep working and stuff like that. Like, that's hard. It was easier in the beginning. Like, it would have been a lot easier for me. I would have been totally fine financially and everything last spring to say, you know what, let's give this another year.
Well, and real quick, because I mean, I went on your website, calvinwayman.com slash book, because I still haven't, I actually did order the book. It just hasn't come in yet.
Okay, cool.
But your tagline on the book, it's the guide to achieving breakthrough and permanently transforming into the new you.
Yes.
Did this come from all that? Was it just, this was that transition?
Yes. It's actually been several transitions that I've made. So what I've realized is the fish out of water thing comes from an idea that I feel like is missing in personal development and in goal setting and when people talk about their vision. Okay. People talk about having your why and your vision and going after it. But I don't think that's enough. I think there's a realness to life that isn't talked about very much. And we're coming up on January, and so you'll see this. January is going to come, and what is everybody going to be doing?
New Year's resolutions.
Yep. And they're going to get super, super excited about it. I'm like, yes, this is the year. I'm going to lose 40 pounds. I'm going to quit my job. I'm going to get that career. I'm going to do this thing. And then come February, what happens? Most people quit.
Their goals were never – it's funny because I do talk about why a lot, and I talk about mindset a lot too in my coaching. Because actually, I've had my own side hustles as well. I've had since the firefighting, I'd already been a health and fitness junkie. I had in the corporate world. I actually in my mornings, 6 o'clock in the morning, I always had a side hustle. Even if it was a part-time job, I always did something on the side because I knew the corporate thing wasn't enough. Like I used to teach spinning instruction for five, six years at a gym.
Nice.
So I always had that to balance my life, my mental state, my physical. I needed that physical fitness. And then fast forward to the firefighting. It's hilarious because like they would kill you for 6 months, like 16 hours a day, 6 months straight over the summers during the hottest part of the year. That's when all the fire risk was. And then they lay you off. I mean, unless you were a permanent federal, you know, career.
Do you get paid? Do you get paid while you're off?
They give you guaranteed unemployment.
Gotcha.
But it's obviously it's based on a percentage, based on what you made. So as hotshots, we were elite. So they shipped us all over the West. So the great thing was I got to see the whole Western US on government dime, AKA my tax dollars as well. But in the end, it was nice to have some freedom. So it gave me time to work on stuff or travel and just start to learn more about myself in my 30s that I didn't spend enough time in my 20s because I was too busy working for corporations and just trying to build that successful Scott, you know, career guy.
right.
But the one thing I got out of that from the firefighting experience was hilarious because most of these guys, I'd say largest percentage of the men and women that did this and got laid off, they would let their lifestyle drop in the off season. They didn't like they went super, super hardcore for 6 months. And trust me, it's exhausting. Like I needed at least a month of recovery. And then like they would not train at all until like a month or two before the fire season. So it's like, what are you doing? This totally connects over to what you and I are talking about right now with goals and lifestyle. And it's like, no, dude, you got to stay with it all year round because these crazy extreme ups and downs is what creates stress and all this. Because like, in 4 months, I've got to kick it into high gear. I'm like, no, start kicking in it a little bit right now. I mean, this stands for fitness training, you know, health, nutrition, businesses.
Absolutely, everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is what I found. The reason I did the fish out of water thing is, all those things are important. You got to have a vision of where you're even going. Realize that you need to be consistent so that you're not killing yourself when race day comes, so to speak, or fighting day comes. Yep. And what I noticed is, every New Year's resolution or every beginning of the year, there's not a shortage of goals being set, but there's a massive shortage of goals being met. And I feel like one of the reasons goals fail, and I even analyze this in my own self, is after people start taking action towards a goal, again, they get serious about it. They say, I'm going to do this. But then they go after it for a few weeks. The excitement wears off, and it feels weird, and they feel out of place and because they're doing something they've never done before. And the tragedy is when they get to that point, like in February most years, they end up reverting back to their old normal or their old fishbowl. In fact,
easy.
A lot of those – exactly, because it was easier, right? And that's what I realized is the reason there's this – I believe there's this stage that everybody's going to hit into when you're leveling up. And it's when you make a decision, you're like, this is my why. I'm going after it. And then you're going to hit this stage where you feel like a fish out of water. This could be like it was that way for me when I got into sales. I interviewed a couple people for my book. It happened to Lewis Howes when he got injured and he was now getting into the online space. John Lee Dumas felt like this when he first got into podcasting, right? They hit this stage where you feel like a fish out of water. And this is why. It's because you're out of your element. You're doing something that is not your normal. The tragedy, though, is when most people become a fish out of water, they revert back to what's easy. And so what my whole book is about is what are the principles and the steps to take to get to the other side?
Interesting.
Because you can, and there's you end up creating a new normal for yourself. What's so cool when you break through, it's almost like riding a bike. If once you actually can do it, you have that skill, and it's very hard to go back. When you hit that certain level where you literally transform in your fitness, you're a different person.
Yes.
By the way, through this, something I haven't talked about too much, but I've used this that just like 6 or 7 weeks ago, I ran an ultra marathon.
You got me beat. I haven't done an ultra yet. What?
Well, you've gotten me beat because I haven't even run a marathon,
okay.
But I did an ultra. So I did what Hal Elrod did. Listening to his book, The Miracle Morning, went from hating running to doing an ultra, and I did that in Park City, Utah, up in the mountains in rain and snow. But to get to that point, I went up against that resistance, mm-hmm. of like, what's going to happen? And it was more like for a mental game.
So
than
your book
one.
Is kind of like, all right, so if you've ever studied anything about running in marathons, and I'm more of a cyclist, I'm a huge road cyclist, mountain biker, hundreds of miles, I don't care. Running, it's not my thing. I'll do it if I have to. It's no big deal. But when you study marathon training, they talk about the proverbial wall.
Yes.
That is that usually right around that 20, 21 mile section of the 26.2 miles. So yep. I don't know where the hell it is on an ultra. It's probably that.
For me,
there's probably more than one wall.
For me, it is more than one wall, but my biggest wall was at mile 26.
Okay. It's that first one, right? So your book, you're targeting that section of the timeline, that transition, that transient state when you're about to basically, that metamorphosis.
Yes.
It's that key. Point.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. You just used the word metamorphosis.
Yeah.
And not just in like a one day thing, but in other areas of your life, in anything that you're leveling up to. People setting up goals to get out of debt, for example. And to get out of debt, it's not just numbers. People confuse that the reason they're in debt is they're not good with math or they're not good with numbers.
It's a behavior.
But it's. Exactly. It's a behavioral thing. So you literally have to change your behaviors. And so when you start changing those behaviors, it feels weird because it's not what you're used to. And so, yeah, there's three main core ideas that I talk about in the book, like continuing to take consistent imperfect action, a lot of people think it has to be perfect. And it doesn't have to be.
No, and you're joining the ranks. There's a lot of people who have actually, they say it in different ways, but that whole taking imperfect action, it's not always going to be perfect.
Yes. Yeah. We're always, we sometimes think, and what the problem is a lot of people think that because they're their own worst critic or because they want to do something greater, they think that they can't even move unless it's going to look perfect. So they end up standing still or worse, just going back to what they're used to.
Sure.
Right. So that's one of the things. And then another one that I'll just touch on that makes little sense based on what we've talked about is you have to – in my book, I call it getting schooled. You got to get schooled. And I don't necessarily mean education.
I like to say you have to get your ass handed to you once in a while.
Yes, that has to happen, unfortunately.
I mean, we're not talking about a school bully here, people. We're talking about like life. I mean, it's good to get a wake-up call.
But this is how I use schooled. Since it's called fish out of water, I'm using a fish term. So – getting in a school in fish terms is getting around other fish, and it's fish that's swimming in a similar direction. So whatever your goal is, something that I've just noticed and a lot of other people that have done, super successful people, is they get around other people swimming in the same direction that they are. So if you want to be an entrepreneur, then get around other entrepreneurs. That's something that Thrive did for me. It got me around other entrepreneurs a year ago.
JLD and numerous speakers talk about that. It's like, listen, I mean, what's the Jim Rohn quote, famous quote? You're a product of the five people you spend the most time with. Yeah, or whatever
absolutely.
It is.
Absolutely. Yeah. If you want to be healthy, if you're hanging around five fat people that are unhealthy, chances are you're going to be the sixth.
Yeah.
You know? But if you want to be successful in health or in fitness, then hang around those types of people because that's how you're going to become the sixth.
I get into those conversations all the time because I actually, thanks to the firefighting, that's how I found, if you ever heard about CrossFit, I found CrossFit that back then in 2010. Like that was how they trained us in the first two weeks.
I talk about CrossFit in my book. I touch on CrossFit a little bit because that's why CrossFit has such a wildly successful success rate compared to most gyms.
Well, and a lot of it is based on the community.
Exactly. It's because you're around other people going after similar goals and dreams, working together, and it's just not even, it's not even debatable anymore.
Yep. That's why I became a coach.
There we go.
Yeah.
And so, that's what the whole book Fish Out of Water is really designed to do, is to recognize that you're going to hit this stage where you feel like you're out of your element, you're out of your normal, and it's because you are out of your normal, but these are the things that you can do to break through and create a new standard for yourself, so you don't end up reverting back to being a guppy, as I call it.
Nice.
You break through and become what I call a shark.
Oh, very nice. And going back to that getting schooled piece, I think it's one of the other cool things about, to your side of that explanation of putting yourself into a better school of fish, so to speak, or in a better community, mm-hmm. is that, going back to the way I used it, you will get schooled by some of your
totally.
Fellow people in the community, because you're gonna get these wake up calls like, are you serious? Why I didn't think of that before?
In so many ways, like that. In fact, when I decided to get to do something challenging, like even running more than a marathon, at first I thought there's no way that could happen. Then I started talking to other runners, and I met another guy named Scott. His name's Scott Black, who actually has done 10 100 mile races.
Ooh, nice.
And I'm like, are you kidding me? And so by getting schooled by him and realizing what's out there, then it expanded my own thinking, and was like, I had to be honest with myself. And I realized it wasn't the 50 miles that was holding me back. It was my own limitation of what I believed was actually possible.
You and I have a lot in common. That's how did you ever run a 5K before that?
I did a 10K and a half marathon.
Okay. So
actually I might have done a 5K now that I think about it.
I did everything.
Like 3 point something.
I did everything back asswards, so to speak, because I went down to Washington, D.C. to watch a good friend of mine complete a marathon, the Marine Corps Marathon in Washington, D.C. back in 2007.
Okay.
And me being the competitive guy, I'm with his friends. We're jumping from subway stop to subway stop, getting ahead of him, watching him run by. And I'm like, yeah, that's fun and all, but I'm like, no, I'm just not a sidelines guy. So I told him at the end of his race, I was like, dude, you and I are doing this together again next year, because he was running in memory of a friend who had passed away. And I said, dude, I will be your wingman. We'll do this again. And so I went from no running background to doing the marathon. I don't recommend it, but probably the last 3 months before the race, he and I were training together, because I needed to go train with him, because he's already done it.
He's done it. Yeah.
And he's already broken through those proverbial walls. And that's what I needed to do. So I didn't know any other runners.
Totally. And by the way, something interesting happened that I should tell you, to just from me telling a marathoner. When I hit that wall at 26, it was one of the most depressing moments of my life, because I was like,
because you had to keep going.
I had to sit down. Yeah. Well, what the thing that depressed me was, I was halfway done. Like, I just gave it my all. I was so dead that like 50 people had passed me.
Yeah,
and they're
hard.
Not just saying, some people are saying, you got to keep going. But a lot of people are asking me in a concerned voice, are you okay?
Right.
So I know I must not be looking good, or my form's off.
Oh, none of us look good when you're a beginner. It's not pretty.
And so I'm sitting there and realizing, oh my gosh, I'm literally only halfway done, and this is not going to get easier. But interestingly enough, I didn't know if I could finish, but I knew I could take another step, and I knew I could make it to the next checkpoint. And I was just putting in chunks and going after things. And then something interesting happened. From mile 26 to 39 for 13 miles, I had never run faster in my entire life.
Oh, interesting.
Craziest thing ever. Like almost all of them, if not all of the 50 people that passed me 4 hours earlier, I passed them back.
Wow.
After 4 hours, and there was just this new wind and this new, like, they, I don't know if they call it a second wind or if it was, but whatever
yeah,
it was.
That's a term that gets thrown around. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if it was that, but I was just flinging up the mountains. I felt like I was flying down the mountains. And it's just interesting for me now, because the farthest I'd ever run in my training was 25 miles. So I was now past my breaking point of the farthest I'd ever gone. And I was going to quit. I could have quit, and I would have been satisfied in a way, because I had gone farther than I'd ever gone. It would have been a good checkbox or a good pat on the back that I did my best.
Okay.
But just taking those next steps, I found something that I did not know existed. And that was whatever was inside of me just burst out, and it was even faster than when I started at the beginning of the day.
That's pretty cool.
It was super interesting. Yeah.
I will say I had that feeling at 26 when, because I went back and ran that in Washington, D.C., which is one of the biggest marathons in the U.S. I think it was around mile 20. It was right after I hit my wall around 2021, broke through. Uh-huh. I made the mistake of slowing just to a walk for a few steps. Uh-huh. And then realized that was a bad idea, because when you try and get going again, oh my God, that was painful.
So hard.
And you just have to crush. You have to break. It's like breaking through, like, I don't know what it was, crunchy muscles, whatever you want to call it. I was like, then I got going again, but I had an elderly woman just truck up alongside me. You're doing great. And they kept on going. And I was like, that 70-year-old woman just passed me like I was standing still.
Oh my gosh.
So I'm with you on the 50 people or how many people passed you. It's like, oh man, that's just, that's cool though. You were able to revitalize and then keep going. So obviously you finished the race. So.
Yeah, well, that's a whole nother thing in and of itself. So I come to near the last checkpoint. I was coming up on mile 47. They asked me how you're doing. I said, I'm doing great. And they're like, unfortunately, we have to pull you.
Oh, there's a time cutoff?
And they're like, yes, because what happened was the race started 30 minutes later because of the snow.
Oh.
Because it was snowing in the mountains, but the cutoffs had to stay the same. So we had that whole thing going to our head. So I was like, what do you mean? What time is it? It was 6:50. And I was like, the race doesn't end till 8. Let me keep going. Like, well, unfortunately, when we did that reroute earlier, because we had to be rerouted because of the snow as well, it extended the course 4 miles. And so we had to be done with the whole, not 50 miles, but 54 miles in 30 minutes less than we had.
Oh man, they must have gotten a bad review from that event, because people like you would have probably had some very choice words to say.
Well, so what happened was I was just like, well, can I just keep going? I know it's not official, but my goal is to run 50 miles today. I don't care if it's official or not official. Can I just keep going? And they're like, I guess so. I mean, we don't own the mountain. We'd just have to take your bib number.
Yeah, because there's a liability of insurance and all that stuff.
Exactly. And so I was going to have him take my bib number. The guy calls the main guy down on the mountain, says, hey, Calvin, number 163 wants to keep running. He understands he's on his own. There's no more aid stations, but he just wants to finish. And the guy ends up calling back and says, no, he's not. He can't do that. We can't do that. Put Calvin in the truck and bring him off the mountain right now.
Oh, man.
So I was one of the last people that was getting pulled off the mountain. And as I was driving down, I was still like, you know what? There's no fucking way I'm going to get this far and not run 50 miles. Because I already broke through throughout the whole race. I'm like, am I going to make it?
You broke through every damn wall that was thrown at you.
And by the time I was in that 30 range, when I was in that 30 range, I'm like, I am fucking doing this. There's nothing.
I would have faked like I had to throw up so they'd pull me over, and then I would have taken off.
Well, this is what happened. This is what happened. I said, if I have to run down the street to hit 50 miles, I'm going to do it. And then somebody had a GPS there, and I was like, how far have I gone? And I had gone 47.68 or no, it was farther than that. However, it was like 47.72. I needed to go 2.28 miles left. Just 2.28 miles left to hit 50 miles. Hmm. And so I was like, fine, just drop me off somewhere and I'm going to run in one direction and then come back and finish. And they were all for it. And so the guys were like, tell you what, we'll just drop you off at the finish line. Just run in one direction for a mile, 0.14, then turn around and come back. I was like, that sounds perfect. That's what I'm going to do.
There you go.
So that's what I did. So they dropped me off at the finish line, and I ran in one direction, a mile, 0.14, turn around and came back. I was literally – because the race was done at this point. So, but they were waiting for me, which was awesome. It was totally dark at this point. I had people coming up on bicycles. I'm like, are you Calvin Wayman? I'm like, yeah, what's up? I'm like, oh, cool. We know what you're doing. We're waiting for you.
Awesome. And so, that's awesome, man. All right. That's a good event. Okay.
Yeah, it was totally fun. So
What was the name of that event?
It was the Court Gore-Tex or something like that. They called it the Endurance Challenge.
And it was in Utah?
It was in Park City, Utah.
Oh, yeah.
So after 15 hours, I officially hit did go 50 miles. Did not officially finish the race, but I officially ran 50 miles that day. So
that's crazy, man. I mean, I my first marathon, I think I ran it in like 4 hours and 45 minutes with no, you know, major running event background. And I was proud of that. I didn't care. I was like, hey, sounds good to me.
That sounds amazing. Like, yeah, I did when I was doing my training and I got up to 25 miles. I think I did that in 5 hours. So your time sounds amazing.
Well, yeah, I was limping a little.
But for real.
I'll take a bike any day. But that's, see, that these are the lessons that people should be hearing about. This is why I'm so excited to have a podcast show now, because what you just got done telling us and what we've been bouncing back and forth, most of our conversation when we started off here, it had a heavy entrepreneurial theme. But yeah, this isn't just about people and bit. I mean, yes, that's one of the three domains
human.
I talk about. This is human life lessons. This is not just great. If you don't want to start your own business and create some freedom, fine. I mean, I think you're crazy, but then take this and apply it to your health, your fitness, or in your case, this was just a personal goal. I mean,
yeah, I did it just because I wanted to see if I could. And that's kind of the theme that anybody listening to this that I want to see, that I just keep on, I want to keep hammering home, is about a year and a half ago, I was just at a corporate job, 40 pounds heavier, not entirely happy. And so a lot of people think, well, we look at successful people, whether they're successful in fitness or in business, and we're like, well, easy for them to say, easy for Gary Vaynerchuk to say, easy for that Olympic athlete to say. Mm-hmm. But no, we're all just human beings. And that's what I want people to know with me, is I don't ever want people to be like, well, easy for him to say. I never literally have never ran a marathon before, and I did that. And I quit my day job without knowing what I was going to do next, and things are working. I had never written a book before, and I wrote a book in about 2 months, you know, and I just want, I want that to be the permission that whatever somebody has inside of them to go after something, whatever that is, that they can freaking do it. So I like what you just said. It's not just about business, but whatever it is that they want to do, it can be done.
Well, and that's the beauty of this. Like, I don't see anywhere on your book that it says anything about the word entrepreneur. Like, right? It's like, right, dude, it's just fish out of water. It's, yeah, this is a bigger picture situation. So
totally. And since I have an entrepreneurial kind of focus and background, and there's kind of entrepreneurial stories in there, but you're right. That's why I mentioned if it can be applied to your health and your finances, what, any area that you want to level up to. You know,
well,
that's,
and
what
I love that you and I actually have, I didn't realize we had so much more common than I realized.
Yeah.
This is hilarious. So, but
it's awesome.
The chapter of escaping, not just the corporate world, but the chapter of also escaping just somebody who just tried slapping another roadblock in front of you to finish your ultra. I mean, that's what we're hearing today, is like, this is the biggest takeaway, is like, man, embrace the roadblocks. Because that's what's going to teach you mentally. What are you going to do next? Are you going to accept it and wallow in your own self-misery a week later?
That's all it's about, I think. I don't think there's a guy named Kyle Cease. I just recently went to his event. He's like a personal development former stand-up comedian, and he kept saying to get good being okay with not knowing, and just whatever comes, saying, "Okay, this is where I'm at. Then what?"
Right.
And it makes a lot of sense to me. Like, if you think about a chess game, I think a lot of people think they want to plan how to win a chess game, and you can't plan to win a chess game because things happen. So every move is like a roadblock in a sense, right?
Sure.
Somebody moves a certain move in chess, you don't all of a sudden just flip the board over and be like, well, this sucks. You're like, well, this happened. Now what? You know? And that's all that was. It didn't even feel like any heroic thing at the moment. I was like, well, I want to run 50. I'm literally 2.28 miles away. What's next? I will run down the street if I have to, because that's pretty close.
Or, I gotta say, man, that was pretty freaking creative.
Hey, I just wanted to do it. I was like, I just went through all of this for the last 13 hours or whatever it was. When else am I gonna do it? I don't know. And I'm this close. Literally, I'm gonna go to bed tonight, and I could have 50 miles done by the time I go to bed. Why not just go to bed with 50 miles done, you know? So
that's awesome, man. I love that. And I think that totally connects back to I'm losing track of how many people I've now brought on the show from Thrive, just because we all have the same takeaways. And now this is already a couple weeks later, And it goes back to what you and I were talking about, is you really have to stay on top of your stuff. You have to keep revitalizing your stuff, like your goals, because like we could have forgotten a lot of this already. And that's what I've been enjoying bringing on each and every person that I've met or gotten a takeaway like yourself from Thrive, is that it's now a couple weeks later and it's keeping everything fresh in my mind. You know, I've only gone back over my notes in my book once or twice because they gave us all journals at that event. Mm-hmm. I thought that was great because we're all going to write stuff down differently. And then now I'm being able to interview and co-host with you. I can see how you take stuff away differently and what you're bringing to the table. So clearly I totally now understand why you obviously went to Thrive because last year's event was even more impactful to you than what this year was.
It was. And it was just cool to go back and to reflect. Holy cow. There's been a lot that's happened in 12 months. And it was cool to hang out with new people. I mean, one of the guys that I got to hang out with quite a bit was James Altucher, one of the speakers. And he's like a quirky, funny dude. And just being in the back and connecting with different people, or Jordan Harbinger, like when you can get into a room of people, I think events has been one of the biggest hacks that I've fallen onto in the last year and a half, because there's just so many amazing people that congregate there. So,
you know, it's kind of funny because I love going to events athletically. I just love being surrounded by all that freaking pumped up energy. So with Thrive, it was just refreshing being in a business style event that was just, actually, I really want to call that more lifestyle event. Yeah, we talked a lot about making money matter, and we talked a lot about, and most of the speakers are successful business professionals, real estate professionals, famous people like Jack Canfield, like world renowned author. But we're talking about lifestyle here too, man. This is
absolutely
big picture thinking, man. Like, if you're not happy with what's going on in your life, then find any event. I mean, what was the event you were just talking at?
It was an event called DECA. It was mostly for younger business,
like business entrepreneurs.
Yeah. And younger, there was a lot of high school aged kids there. And so it's about preparing them for the future of business and stuff like that.
That was
in Seattle.
That's pretty cool.
It was super cool. Yeah. And it was fun because a lot of these guys have never even been exposed to this world that we're even talking about, of lifestyle and that you can dream bigger. I mean, I was dropping Tony Robbins' name around, and nobody had heard of who Tony Robbins was, believe it or not.
Oh my God. So, are you serious?
I'm dead serious. I was like, oh my gosh. I was no longer afraid let me put it this way. I had the bigger sense of mission grew out of that event, because I've always wondered, well, if I'm doing something like this, there's already somebody else doing it, like a Tony Robbins or a Gary Vee or whoever, and similar stuff I'm interested in. But here's this whole group of people. There was 2,200 people in that room, and almost none of them knew who Tony Robbins was. I dropped a joke near the end, thinking that it was going to tear the house down. I talk about my darkest day, and I was trying to put it towards like a Christian theme. And I was like, and then I asked what we all ask when we're in a dark day. I was kind of playing towards what would Jesus do?
Right.
And I said, and I asked, what would Tony Robbins do? And I, for me, I was like, that'll just wake people up. And then it was just crickets. And I was like, wow, really? And then afterwards, every person I asked, do you know who Tony Robbins is? Like, nobody knew who he was.
That's,
I was like, okay,
crazy.
I've got work to do. And so that's, so whoever is in that speaker space or in a space of impacting lives and everything, we got our work cut out for us. There's a lot of people that still need uplifting, that still need to see that they can create the life that they want to create and enjoy their time doing it. They don't just have to follow the exact system that's already laid out.
So. And I think that's an important lesson to anybody who's been considering maybe becoming someone of influence, is that, number one, we all have to start somewhere, right? But we also all have different circles of influence. I mean, me being a CrossFit coach, and like I've been a ski race coach for years. I mean, I was a corporate coach when I was in the business world, all that stuff. Like, my circles are different than your
vastly
circles.
Different.
So
absolutely. You're so right. I think we sometimes think that Tony Robbins is more influential than you and I, for example.
Oh, hell no. I mean, he's pretty influential.
Well, that's what I was going to say. It depends on what your context is, because I'll tell you what, I have way more influence, I'd like to think, over my wife and my son than he does. You have way more influence over the circles that you're in that may or may not know him, right?
Sure.
Now, overall, he might have bigger influence, but you just said it. We have different pockets and different circles of influence that somebody else may or may not have.
Well, so. And that's why marketing is so powerful, and what you and I do with social media and everything else is that we're showing people how to not just – I'm not just trying to push products and services. Like, I'm sharing – I cross-share. That's why I launched a podcast. I wanted to have something pure that was serving others and getting other people's voices out there, you know, to my future growing audience, because – now people are going to know who CalvinWayman.com is. I mean, yeah. Now people are going to know that, oh, you're also a speaker and you're an author, and people never heard of fish out of water. I didn't know about fish out of water until I went to Thrive. So,
yeah,
I mean, that's these are the things that we need to be doing also as influencers, is that we cross-share things.
Absolutely.
It's not just – now, obviously, I'll share our podcast episode, but then I love going out there and retweeting things if you're on Twitter, or I'll share –
absolutely.
I share on my own Facebook feed for Live the Fuel. I share other podcasts I listen to. If an episode really connects with me, I'm going to give them props. I tag them. I share them because it's something impacting my life. And if there's people following me, even if I only have – I don't know. I think I'm approaching 2,000 followers on Facebook. I don't care. But those are unique, organic followers I've never paid for. Those are people that are following that feed for a reason. So they're going to be following stuff that I'm sharing. So until I get to bigger speaker events, and obviously the likes and stuff will increase, or as a show grows in success, yes, that will increase. But I think that's the power of us realizing, stop holding back. Take risks.
Totally.
Get out there. Do a speaking event, or just go to an event and immerse yourself around people, to what you and I have talked about here today, that have already maybe done this stuff and made those mistakes or had those successes, so you can learn from that.
Yeah. And I think that's a good way to kind of, as we come near the end, is find the one small thing that you can do, like go sign up for an event. I mean, maybe long-term you want to be a speaker or something, and you're not going to like put on your whole event tomorrow, but
yeah. Well, your event literally sign up for an event. You know, plug you here, calvinwayman.com/live, right? That's the link for your event. Yeah.
Yep.
And that's we got plenty of time here, people. So even if you don't live in the San Diego area, is that where it's going to be, by the way, San Diego?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. San Diego, December 10th and 11th.
Yeah. So there you go. And usually the best events are usually trying to time it on the weekends, because the weird thing is that is weekend, right?
Yep. It's Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah.
To make it easy for people that have day jobs.
The 9-to-5er job, right? So it's okay. Like this is the example of the side hustle. Maybe you don't have a side hustle that we see on Instagram and everybody using hustle, hustle, hustle. Maybe you don't have a side hustle financially yet, but this is how you start building a side hustle that could possibly become your primary business one day, or primary passion, is that you have to start at least taking the steps, doing the reps, going to events, buying the books. Eventually you got to get to a point where if you bought us like you and I, you bought enough books, you paid for enough webinars, it just take freaking action and start building your following.
Yes. And that's, and I think that's what another thing that's so powerful about an event is, an event, you're around other people that are thinking bigger, and you see what's possible, and you start thinking in a way that, holy cow, I didn't know I could actually do that. And you're around other people that are in it. And so it can just really put you on a trajectory that's way higher than you could have ever planned yourself.
And everybody's going to get fired up and fueled in a different way. You clearly ripped the lid off very quickly. I mean, in a little over a year's time, major action was definitely taken. I mean, that's impressive, bro. I'm just giving you major props for that, because my entrepreneurial mindset has been taking a little bit longer. And I think you and I are both, I think everybody needs to understand that it's always going to be growing.
It's so weird that you even say that, though, because I was saying the same thing about other people when I was getting started, and was like, man, like when I'm in it, I mean, there's 12 major things. Like if we talk about my book and becoming debt free and all these things that have happened over the last year, and but it didn't, it feels like a lot, but most of the days nothing happened, you know?
Sure.
And I think that's one other thing that's super important for people to realize is, a lot of times when you're on your climb up, it's not very exciting. It's literally not. It's boring.
Well, you still have real life.
Yeah.
You have a
family. You still have real life.
You're a father.
You have your, absolutely. You have all that. But what I'm saying too is you have to take action. And sometimes you don't see the result right away, right? You have to submit an article pitch and get it rejected. and then come up with another one and another one and another one, and then try to get on podcast interviews maybe and get rejected, or reach out to different people to maybe go to their speaking event, or start a company and then reach out to 20 people to let them know about your services to maybe get one that's interested that could become your client.
Yeah.
You know, there's all of these things that are kind of boring. So I think the main point there is, yeah, a lot of stuff has happened in a year and a half, but out of 12 major things that have happened in a year and a half, that's only 12 days out of however many days are in a year and a half, which is probably like over 500 days.
That's a good point.
You know,
we have to put in the time. We have to put in the reps. Yes, maybe one person's stuff might explode a little bit faster than yours. That just means that we have to take a few more reps, hone the message, hone the product, hone the service, whatever it is you're working on. But I think the biggest piece here is people need to be taking action, but they also need to be patient with themselves as well.
Yes, you're absolutely right. And the more you come up with these gold nuggets, the more good stuff that you're lighting up in me. Because something else that you just said is like, when you see it in other people, instead of feeling bad about it, a switch that I've made that I feel like has made things speed up for me is when I'm recognizing somebody doing something that I want to do, I used to get mad or jealous because it would either remind me that I'm not there, or I'd feel bad that they get it first and I don't have it. Mm. And I switched my mind into being grateful that that's there, because it made it, and I was like, you know what, that just means I'm getting closer, and it's like there on my path. When I made that switch, things happened more quickly. My book got done super fast because I was no longer like feeling bad that my book was taking forever. And then I would see my friends getting on TED Talks and doing speaking gigs, and I was like, man, I haven't gotten any major ones yet. And frick. Then once I started becoming grateful for those types of things, and I was like, that just means mine's right around the corner and it's coming. It's so crazy how things seem to just fall in place. And I don't understand like all of the science or the woo-woo and the secret and all that and how it's working.
And I've read the book, I've watched the movie, The Secret, all that stuff. Apparently there's all this energy, and it's really weird, but it seems to be true.
But it's real. Yes, totally agree. And that's what it's feeling like. And it's crazy because one of my goals was to be a keynote speaker this year. I had no idea how it was going to happen. And as soon as I started becoming grateful for seeing people speaking, instead of being reminded that I'm not a speaker yet and it's one of my goals, it just freaking happened.
Yeah.
It's so weird. Like, no,
and the key word there you said was yet.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And so that's one thing that I would say is, like, if you're seeing somebody out there doing something that you know you want to do, whether it's the lifestyle, whether it's the body that you want, instead of getting jealous or mad at that person, just feel grateful for that and let that be a clue that you're on the path or that it's coming to you. Mm-hmm. At least that's really helped me. So.
Well, it definitely helped you with your book because, I mean, I'm sure you didn't expect it to become an Amazon.com bestseller. that all of a sudden, boom, it is. It's like, oh, well, there's a wake-up call.
Not just that. I have to say, it was in the top 100 of all books in the success category on Amazon. So, like, most people will play, like, the game where they put it in a sub category to get that
Ranking. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've heard about that.
I just was like, you know what? I'm just going to keep it in the broad category of success of hundreds of thousands of books, and still got in the top 100 of all books on Amazon in the success category. So I was super excited about that.
Well, you've just given me somebody else to study your little book story then, because it's been something that's been in the back of my mind for a couple of years since the firefighting, and I've bounced around possibly writing a book, and after going to Thrive and meeting Lewis Howes and everybody else, I'm like, man, looks like that's going to have to go on the goals list.
do you know have you heard of Caleb Maddox?
No.
He's the guy that actually finally made me write my book this January. So part of it actually ties in perfectly to what I just barely said. So I'm glad how you asked it that way. But in January, I learned about this guy named Caleb Maddox. He has a successful six-figure business. He has been on stages with people like Gary Vaynerchuk. Mm. He was interviewed by Grant Cardone, and he has his own book that he wrote 2 years ago.
Oh, now, is that the – hold on. I just Googled him, like Keys to Success for Kids?
Yes. Guess how old he is.
Oh, he's got – is he 20s? I don't know.
He's 14.
What?
Yes. He's 14. So he wrote the book when he was 12.
You know, Caleb is a young sounding name. That's a newer generation name. That wasn't an X-gen name.
So when I heard that, Now, before I would say, like, I'd come up with some justification. And I was like you. I had this idea of a book somewhere and didn't know where, when it was going to be on. I was like, well, it'll be someday in the future when I'm ready or when I'm more experienced or I have more to say. But when I found out that he wrote a book, I was like, you know what? If this 14-year-old kid can, which I'm super grateful that he did, I can, and I'm just going to do it.
Dude, and you just gave me my final trigger point. I've already bought a separate journal set aside here, literally on my desk right now, that will be where I start taking notes to start putting my entries in. I've already put a calendar appointment in my phone literally last week to start setting aside like a 300-word goal a day or something like that.
You don't even need that. The calendar is good. Just select one day that you're going to start.
Okay.
And once you just start, by the way, there's other tips that I'd be happy to share with you later on.
Sure.
That helped me get it out of me. Like, the goal is to just puke it out of you.
Okay.
Like,
just get it all out.
Get it out of you as much as you can. And I have some tips and strategies that I use that just help me get it out. Cause once it's out, then you can just organize it and edit it. And most people might want to, like, you hit these walls and it's because you're trying to edit in a way or have it flow or have it be organized, and your brain wants to make it organized and it's not organized, and so it doesn't come out. But if you just get it out of you and just see it there in front of you, then it makes it not only more real, but then you can just organize it after.
So. Well, that sounds awesome. I appreciate that. And actually, I will give you, I got to throw another plug your way because I know you got so much going on, but your socialmediamakeover.org, that site.
Yes.
I'm guessing what you just talked about, obviously we're talking about a book, but I have a feeling that whole concept, that whole theme, those tips and tricks, I'm sure some of that probably goes right into what you teach on social media, right? It's about people telling their story a little bit and getting it all out there.
Yeah. So with socialmediamakeover.org, I totally make over people's social media. And it's basically just giving people a foundation to start building their brand on social media.
Gotcha.
I usually share the four C's to social media success. You can Google Calvin Wayman, four C's of social media. It should come up as a Huffington Post article.
Oh, cool.
And I actually get on the phone and just talk to people about this. My social media makeover is literally me or somebody on my team walking people through it to make sure they understand those four C's and how to use them.
Well, and I knew you had this because you threw it out there for us from Thrive. And admittedly, I've been traveling so much the past couple of weeks. It's on my literally on my to-do list just because I know about social media, but that doesn't mean I'm stupid enough not to take advantage of a free offer and just see how other people are doing things, because we're all different. So you're on my to-do list is to finally click on that thing and get it done. Actually, maybe this weekend.
Awesome. That sounds great. Yeah, people just schedule it and I get on and I just like get people on the right track of if I follow something called the four C's, content, context, consistency, and connection, how to use it and just stand out past the 97%. So that's the plan.
That's awesome. Well, man. Dude, this has been awesome connecting with you. I had no idea you and I had so many other common things. And that's the power of podcasts. That's the power of, again, back to our
just
audience
conversation.
Here. Conversation. Like, go freaking talk to people at events.
Yes.
Or follow up like we've done. Either have a webinar or have a call, or in this case, a podcast co-hosting session, whatever.
Network.
Yeah, networking. So one thing that I've been creating with this show that I want to honor all of my co-hosts being able to do with every one of their episodes is I always have a final word segment of the show. And some people do like quotes and stuff like that, but I'm like, listen, this is your episode. This is your brand. This is what you're putting out there. This is who you are. So that is your chance at the end of this episode to say, okay, for the listeners of Live the Fuel and anybody else who may show this content, like, what is like a final word or message that you want to put out there? That's like, hey, this is Calvin Wayman, man. Like, This is my message. This is what I want you guys to learn from. I don't care. It could be anything you want, but you as a co-host get to own the final word of the episode.
Man, I have a conflict between two of them that's in my head, and I think to kind of fit the theme.
Throw
with
them both.
This,
I don't care.
Well, okay, I will. Then the first one that I hope that you got out of this is I want you to realize that this isn't going to make sense because we haven't even used this word, but I'll make it make sense. You need to realize that there you could create Roger Bannister effects in all areas of your life. Now, what is the Roger Bannister effect? Roger Bannister is known for being the first guy that ran a 4-minute mile, right? And The thing that's interesting about Roger Bannister and the whole story of this is for decades, people tried to run the 4-minute mile and they all failed. So then it became complete knowledge and just well accepted that no human being – that was just the limit. No human being could ever run a 4-minute mile. Like scientists agreed with that. Other – like all the great minds of the world just – that was just well accepted that that was the human limit. But then one person, Roger Bannister, did it, broke the 4-minute mile, made the impossible possible. Now, while that's interesting and exciting and cool in and of itself, that's only half of what's interesting about the Roger Bannister story. The interesting part is this. How long did Roger Bannister's record last? Now, logic would say that because it took humanity decades and decades to finally produce somebody that could run a 4-minute mile, then it would say – logic would say that it would take at least many, many more decades to run – for somebody else to run a 4-minute mile. Like, would you agree with that?
Yes.
Okay, but here's the thing. Roger Bannister's record lasted a whopping 46 days. Not 46 years, 46 days. And what that tells me is once people see that it's possible and that it can be done – oh, by the way, and thousands of people have done it since. So once it's – the impossible is now possible. Once people can see it for themselves, then they can make it happen. So that's the first thing that I hope we did in this episode, and I hope that other people see. And that's why going to events is important and special, is there might be things that you didn't even think about that were possible for you, or you might even just be accepting as a limitation without even giving it any real thought. And I hope that we can create like more Roger Bannister effects in your life to be like, this is something that you can go after. And then the second thing, since you said I can do too, is again, like, done's better than perfect. Done's better than perfect. A lot of times we think that everything has to be just right before we can take action on it. One's better than perfect. One's greater than zero. And just do something, whatever it is, in whatever aspect of life that you want to improve, move in that direction. Know that any result that you get from it is better than nothing. And just move in that direction. Done is better than perfect.
I love that. Done is better than perfect. And I love the reference to the Bannister effect. I have heard about him. I just didn't realize it was that short. So,
yeah.
Well, there you go, ladies and gentlemen. This is one of our longer episodes because there's just so much great content. And again, that's a Power Podcast, so you can just hit pause and listen to it later. So, again, if you guys have enjoyed Calvin today, we've already mentioned it multiple times. Check out calvinwayman.com. You can find him on Twitter. I know he's on there. He's on Instagram as well, at Calvin Wayman. Again, check out his book. Check out his website. Just take action. Do something. And don't worry, as I promised, our show notes always kick ass. I will have every single thing that he and I have talked about on here hyperlinked, messaged, so you can find us later. Stop taking notes because you can just go to the website, livethefuel.com, and look at his notes and take it all in and file that stuff later. So again, guys, this is what we're all about, man. We're here to fuel your health, your business, and your lifestyle. This was a killer episode. Make sure you follow Calvin Wayman. Again, guys, you have a wonderful day. Thanks for listening in and keep living the fired up epic life. We'll talk to you guys again soon.
Peace.
Thank you for listening to Live the Fuel. Visit us at livethefuel.com. Stay connected on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and more at Live the Fuel. Live the fired up epic life. Hashtag Live the Fuel.